Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
From the historic Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles, this is the 22nd Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview. Welcome. I'm Larry Mantle with our Film Week critics, ready to tell us which movies, actors, writers, and directors are most worthy of being honored at this Sunday's Oscars. Our critics are Manuel Betancourt, Justin Chang, Tim Cogshell, Andy Klein, Christy Lemire, Leah Lowenstein, Wade Major, Amy Nicholson, Claudia Puig, Peter Rayner, and Charles Solomon. We begin with Best Animated Feature, and the nominees are The Boy and the Heron, directed by Hayao Miyazaki, Elemental from Pixar Studios, directed by Peter Sohn, Nimona, directed by Nick Bruno and Troy Kwan, Robot Dreams from Pablo Berger, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, directed by Joaquim Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin K. Thompson. Charles, let's start with you. Category 5, Animated Features, which one stands out to you?
Well, this is, and always has been, a two-film race. And that divide represents a dichotomy that goes back more than a century in the art of animation. Spider-Verse is a top-flight studio movie. It set a record for the crew. The more than 1,000 artists worked on it. I suspect its budget was north of $150 million. And it does what American feature films do very well. It's elaborate, it's grand, it's baroque, it's exciting. It's a story based on a familiar comic book character. Conversely, The Boy and the Heron reflects the tradition of animation as an expression of an individual artist's vision. Miyazaki not only directed the film, he wrote it, he designed the characters, he storyboarded the entire feature himself. It is his film in a way very few others in any of the Oscar categories are. I suspect it was made, I'd be surprised if it was a quarter of the budget of Spider-Man and less than a quarter of the staff, but it is such an extraordinary vision by one of the greatest artists I think film or animation have ever produced. I think it deserves to win. I hope it will win. It just won the BAFTA, balancing the Annie, and it's won the bulk of the Critics' Awards. Nimona has some interesting designs in animation, and the first gay hero in an American film. Elemental was the little film that came from terrible reviews and a weak opening. And Robot Dreams is a really charming first film from a very, very promising director, but I don't think any of them can compare with Boy and the Heron.
Claudia.
I agree. I think The Boy and the Heron, I mean, how can you vote against Miyazaki? That's, he was 83. He came out of retirement to make this. The animation is beautiful. It's a very personal story. However, I do think that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is going to win. It has won so many of the awards, with the exception of the BAFTA. It's smart. It's visually dazzling. It is American. It's the first film was one that was beloved. I also really loved Robot Dreams. I know that doesn't have a chance, but I just found it really charming.
You're not alone. I've heard from quite a few people really taken with Robot Dreams.
Oh, it's very charming.
Very touching, yeah. And it has, I'm going to steal this from you, Lael, because you said that it reminded you of past lives. And although that sounds kind of crazy, if you've seen past lives and you see Robot Dreams, you'll see the connection.
All right. Wade.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Migration, followed closely by Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. those are my choices, obviously not the Academy's choices. You know, yeah, Boy and the Heron and Spider-Man are obviously the two standouts here. Everybody else is kind of along for the ride. If I'm forced to vote with these and I can't write in Migration, by the way, Migration and Chicken Run have almost the same plot. It's really, really, it's a whole
so
bird.
Had they merged them, then maybe the one film.
Watch them both.
Chosen.
They're great. Yeah. No, I would have to go with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I know, I think it gets a little shortchanged because the previous one won the Oscar. The previous one was so good. And everyone looks at this and says, oh, they're doing it again. But in a way, that's almost even more impressive that they can do it again, that they can go back to that well and be just as meticulous as they were the first time. Because it has to all start from scratch. They're not working with anything pre-existing. So it is in that respect, a very, very impressive film.
Tim.
Yeah, yeah. None of the children I took to see these films were scared by them. They were didn't scare any of the children. So that was great. I think that's an advance over last year. That's for sure. The Boy and the Heron, absolutely. Miyazaki is going to win this. Robot Dreams, a film with no dialogue, just beautiful images, almost stick figures, just north of stick figures. This beautiful, beautiful story that I think is very sophisticated and very bright. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, since we're going to films that didn't get nominated. I love that movie. For one thing, the turtles were actual teenagers in that movie. It's a whole lot of fun. A Spider-Verse, Boy and the Heron. I think Boy and the Heron is the one that's going to take it.
All right. Lael.
Yeah, it's interesting this is shaping up as a battle between Boy and the Heron and Spider-Man, because they both have done things to advance the art form of animation. Boy and the Heron is Miyazaki's elegiac painterly work that is a little bit inaccessible but quite beautiful. And Spider-Man is, you know, it's the graphically dynamic and really forward-moving. It's propulsive. It's exciting. I think Spider-Man might win unless people are sentimental and go for Boy and the Heron. But for me, it's all about Robot Dreams, which is this beautiful, sweet, soulful, touching, kind of almost quasi-romance love story of friendship. And it will make you laugh and it'll make you cry.
All right, well, let's hear your pick through applause, members of our audience, at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles. Miyazaki's The Boy and the Heron. Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I think it's The Boy and the Heron. All right, very good. Let's move to Best Documentary Feature. And the nominees here are Bobby Wine, The People's President, The Eternal Memory, Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, and 20 Days in Mariupol. Peter, please start us on the documentaries. Which one do you think is the standout?
They're all good, and they're all international. None of them are American documentaries, which is sort of interesting. For me, I guess, of these, 20 Days in Mariupol is the one that really hit home the strongest for me. It's not just that they were there on the ground when it happened, and so they lucked out and made this movie, so to speak. But it's extremely well crafted, the way that it's put together, all of the dynamics of the filmmaking and of what's going on. I mean, you really do feel in the eye of the storm in a way that you almost never feel in even other documentaries that have similar subjects going for him. It's a harrowing movie, and I think also a necessary film.
We should mention that 20 Days in Mariupol, which was directed and it's also narrated by Mstislav Chernov, they were the only team that was in that port city as it was besieged by Russian troops. And so the team were Ukrainian themselves. They spoke the language. They were able to get the trust of the people. And that's the footage that we saw coming out of the siege of Mariupol, was this team. And then Chernov turned it into this incredible feature-length documentary. Amy, what was the standout for you here?
Yeah, I mean, this category among all the categories, I feel like, really comes down to a choice between advocacy and art. You know, they nominate films that make a real impact, stories that we have to be talking about today. And then there's films in this category that also just pushing forward the medium of documentary storytelling. I hope everybody in office sees 20 Days in Mariupol. I hope everybody here sees 20 Days in Mariupol. But for me, the film that I just absolutely love manages to synergize both of these things, and that's Four Daughters. It's a story of a family in Tunisia, a mother and her four daughters. By the time the documentary picks up, two of them are missing, and they're filled in by actresses. And so these two actors and this family talk about what happened in this story of like radicalization and teenage rebellion. It is beautiful. It is artistically done. It is stunning. And I think it's a sign of where documentaries are headed.
Directed by Kauter Ben-Hania. All right, Christy.
I love Four Daughters, too. It was on my top 10 list this past year. And what it does that's so fascinating is it reveals these really deep and hidden emotional truths through the artifice of the structure in ways that are just powerful, subtle but powerful. And so for a long time, I thought Four Daughters was going to win. But increasingly, I think it's going to be 20 Days in Mariupol for all the reasons that we have articulated here. It's important. The perseverance and the foresight, just what it took to get those images and then to get them out, and the way that those images changed people's minds and really opened people's eyes as to what was going on in the early days of the Ukrainian invasion. But also, I think it'll win the way Navalny won. It'll be a statement. People can say, this matters, and we're going to shine a light on this even more so that you all see that it matters.
Andy.
Four Daughters is the only one that didn't make me want to jump off a tall building, basically. I mean, the rest of these are about horrible life in the third world and other places that aren't the third world, but where life is still horrible. Four Daughters has some, pardon me, not Four Daughters, but To Kill a Tiger has some uplift at the end, but it takes an awful long while to get there. I thought 20 Days at Mariupol, which was the first one I saw and the only one I reviewed on the show, was so good and so timely, and I think it's a shoo-in, and it's what I would pick.
All right, and Justin?
I think I would vote for 20 Days in Mariupol for the reasons Peter and Christy stated, but part of me is really rooting for Four Daughters as well, just because, as Amy said, this movie shows a level of formal invention that is rarely, not always nominated, and seldom ever actually wins, and just the way that Kauter Ben-Hania tells the story of this Tunisian family's tragedy using reenactments, using metafictional elements. It's quite something. I would just say the internationalism of this category, which provoked some outcry among American documentarians for where was American Symphony? And it's like, yes, but there's something very heartening about how international this category is. It shows that the documentary branch is actually watching a lot of films and not just rubber stamping the American favorites, so hats off to them. That said, they really, and I know Peter Rayner will second me on this, they really, really should have nominated Menu Plaisir, Les Trois Gros, the brilliant film by Frederick Wiseman, who ridiculously has never been nominated for a documentary Oscar, even though he's won an honorary award a few years ago.
So take 4 hours, make sure you see that film. What is it, 4 hours? Is that, that's a short Frederick Wiseman documentary. It's the edited version. Manuel?
I'm going to advocate for a movie that no one's talked about here, which is La Memoria Infinita, Eternal Memory, by the Chilean filmmaker Maite Alberdi. I think it's one of the most romantic films that came out last year. It's heartbreaking. It's about a Chilean journalist suffering from Alzheimer's, and we witness him and his wife sort of slowly realize that the life that they've lived together is slipping away. And the way that the filmmaker ties in this personal memory to political memory, and how the kind of archivist impetus that this journalist had already had about how to collect Chilean history and memory is sort of now losing his. It's heartbreaking. It did make me want to jump off a bridge, but sort of in this like gleeful kind of way.
That movie really stayed with me a long time. Very powerful.
And you're young, you know. This is a much more.
Thank you.
So what do you mean by that, Andy? I don't know what. Best documentary feature, chance for you to weigh in. Bobby Wine, the People's President. The Eternal Memory. Four Daughters. To Kill a Tiger. 20 Days in Mariupol. 20 Days it is. You're listening to the 22nd Annual Film Week Academy Awards preview from the Orpheum Theater, beautiful historic venue on Broadway in downtown Los Angeles. We're here with our live audience coming out to see all 11 of our critics on stage here at the Orpheum. We have so many more categories to come. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back in just 1 minute. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3.
The feeling's just the same.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Welcome back to the Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles for our 22nd annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Charles Solomon, Peter Rayner, Claudia Puig, Amy Nicholson, Wade Major, Leah Lowenstein, Christy Lemire, Andy Klein, Tim Cogshell, Justin Chang, and Manuel Betancourt. Next up is Best Supporting Actress. The nominees are Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrera in Barbie, Jodie Foster in Naiad, and Davine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Tim, very quickly, your pick out of these five or one you think should have been here?
Well, Joy Randolph is fantastic. She's wonderful. She's not a supporting actress in The Holdovers. She's the lead actress in The Holdovers. But, okay, we're going to do what we're doing. I understand that Emily Blunt is very popular. And Danielle Brooks of The Color Purple, what an extraordinary performance from that young woman. I really hate that they're in this category together. I think it's going to be Davine Joy Randolph's day.
Wade.
Yeah, this is an amazingly strong category. It's the strongest of the four acting categories. Every one of these actresses is doing a huge, heavy lift. Emily Blunt is also named Oppenheimer in this movie. Let's remember that. Danielle Brooks is nominated for the same part that Oprah was nominated for, and Oprah's producing her in the film. That has to be the most intimidating thing in the world. America Ferrera has to compete with Barbie. Jodie Foster has to compete with NIAID. But I agree with Tim. Davine Joy Randolph is the heart. She's the heart and soul of The Holdovers. She carries that movie. It is far and away the most extraordinary performance of the year.
Claudia.
Yeah, if there's an absolute sure bet in this Oscar race, it is Davine Joy Randolph. She has won everything going into it. She deserves it. I also thought Jodie Foster in NIAID was really good.
She's great. Great, yeah. In that film.
But it's going to go to Davine, and rightly so.
Charles.
Well, I also like Jodie Foster, but she's kind of playing a golden retriever to Annette Bening's obnoxious NIAID. And I'm going to go along with my fellow critics. I think it's going to go to Davine. As Claudia said, she's won everything and seems to be just the shoe-in.
Charles, I'm so glad you just keep your reputation intact.
But Lael. I mean, that, if you want to talk about NIAID, I can really let the curmudgeon out.
All right, I bet. Lael.
I too thought Jodie Foster was excellent in NIAID, but I really do think it's going to be Davine Joy Randolph's day and her moment. She's been acting tremendously for a long
what
time.
What would be your pick, though, in the category?
Maybe Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster, all right.
But I do like Davine very much.
It's a tough category. I think we all agree. So this may be a very close vote for members of our audience here at the Orpheum. Best Supporting Actress, Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer. Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple. America Ferrera, Barbie. Jodie Foster, NIAID. Davine Joy Randolph, The Holdovers. To the surprise of no one. Best Adapted Screenplay. The nominees are American Fiction, Cord Jefferson, the writer, Barbie, Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach, the writers, Oppenheimer, it's Christopher Nolan, Poor Things, Tony McNamara, and The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. Best Adapted Screenplay, Manuel.
I need to start by saying justice for Andrew Haig and All of Us Strangers, which is the film that I really wanted it to be here.
Yes.
rightly deserved. Looking at these five, what I love what Nolan does, which is creating like a Rubik's Cube of a tale every time he writes a screenplay, and I think what Greta Gerwig and Baumbach did was nothing sort of astonishing, turning Barbie into the phenomenon. To me, what Jonathan Glazer did with The Zone of Interest, whittling it down, creating this sort of like so ominous point of view and tone and tenor throughout is arguably one of the best screenplays of the year.
All right, for Zone of Interest. Andy.
First of all, I don't know what Barbie is doing in this category. I mean, if that's an adaptation, then so is Maestro an adaptation of somebody's real life. I mean, it's not a pre-existing story, but that's the way they wanted to run it. I like all these films except Zone of Interest, which I thought would have been really great if they stopped a half hour in. I thought the last hour and a half was totally unjustified and didn't add anything. Poor Things is probably my favorite film of the year, so I have to go with that. Oppenheimer had some structural things that bothered me. I think Barbie was an amazing piece of work, working from that source material, if that's what okay. It was.
So poor Things is your pick, is what you're saying.
My pick is Poor Things because
right.
it was just so out there. But it's
Amy.
Not going to win.
Yeah, I'm pulling for American Fiction in this category. This is a phenomenal debut from Cord Jefferson. I absolutely agree with Manuel that Zone of Interest did some really brilliant paring down of that novel. What Cord Jefferson did with American Fiction is some great expansions. This is a movie about how can a man be seen for who he is beyond his race. How can his life be respected for what it is? And Cord has expanded the characters of his life, expanded his love life, expanded his relationships with his families, and then added the little meta bit about what if this was a prestige Oscar pick to the end of it. I think it's just so cleverly done.
Such a funny film. Just, for me, the most entertaining of the 10, American Fiction. Christy.
I love Poor Things. It's the best movie of the year as far as I'm concerned. And I love that the language evolves so specifically. As Bella evolves, like every step of the way of her development, the language is so specific and so weird to correspond with that. And it's just darkly funny and out there, as Andy said. I think American Fiction is going to win, though, because it's so sharp and it's so smart and self-aware and provocative.
Justin.
Well, I hate to be the Charles of this particular panel, but
there
I think
are
American
worse roles to have.
I think American Fiction is going to win too, and I don't like it at all. I think the satire is really leaden and flat-footed, and I mean Amy, by the way, who wrote one of the best reviews of American Fiction in the New York Times that I've read, and was I like her review much more than the movie. I think that. And I not to rubber stamp Manuel, but Justice for All of Us Strangers and Justice for the Zone of Interest, which is one of the best movies of the year. What Jonathan Glazer does with Martin Amis's novel, paring away dialogue, paring away characters, and you know structural things that the novel is doing, and distills the story to its terrible essence in a way that is completely mesmerizing. It is just head and shoulders, I think, above everything else. And I really like Oppenheimer and Poor Things as screenplays as well.
He didn't pair away enough.
Best adapted screenplay, Peter.
Yeah, if Barbie fits in this category, if Air had been nominated, that would be like for best adapted sneaker.
Yeah, right, because Nike, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just the same principle at work. Oppenheimer, I think, is, Chris Nolan, I think, has many virtues as a filmmaker. Being a storyteller is probably not one of them. Poor Things, I enjoyed, but I think it's more of a stunt than anything else. American Fiction, I enjoyed. I thought it was quite sharp and funny in places. But I also think that the central premise, which is that, you know, this guy can't get a serious black novel published because that's not what is out there, that's not what sells, is really a bogus agenda. I mean, you know, tell that to Marlon James or Colson Whitehead or Zadie Smith, etc. I thought it was sort of a toothless satire. I think Zone of Interest is a great movie, and the sort of skeletal bone chill of that adaptation is very unlike the book in many ways, but I think it distills that sort of poison essence to it that's so powerful.
Best adapted screenplay, American Fiction. Barbie. Oppenheimer, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest. Next category, Best Original Screenplay, and the nominees here are Anatomy of a Fall, written by Justine Triet and Arthur Harari, The Holdovers from David Hemmingson, Maestro, Bradley Cooper and Josh Singer collaborating, May December, screenplay by Sammy Birch, The Story by Birch and Alex Mechanic, and Past Lives, Celine Song. Lael.
Oh, I'm glad I get to go first. I like this, I like this category. This is a really interesting category. Look, I would like to see Anatomy of a Fall get it. It is, I think, one of the most complex and fascinating and intricate films of the year. It's an exercise in limited perspective and in restricted viewpoint. The audience is sort of almost implicated in the courtroom scene in making a decision.
It's also, just a little closer.
It's also about the politics of a marriage. And the fact that Hüller's character is being in some ways punished for having a career of her own. I've seen this movie three or four times, and every time I see it, I reach a different conclusion about the death of her husband. So it's a movie that leaves you constantly guessing, that makes you wonder and question. I think it's incredibly well written and shrewd. I also liked Past Lives very much. I thought that was just a brilliant first screenplay, but for me, Anatomy of a Fall. And I will just point out that this is the category that films like Juno, Pulp Fiction, Lost in Translation, Get Out, and Jojo Rabbit will win. They're sort of the originals that don't tend to get any other awards, but in this case, I think it'll be Anatomy.
Claudia.
I'm going to channel my inner Charles here, and Maestro and May December should not even be on this list, right?
Here, here.
I mean, come on. Maestro, no. I'd say it's Anatomy of a Fall, but I think it's, I adored Past Lives. It's my favorite of the nominees for Best Picture. It's not my favorite picture of the year. All of Us Strangers, but it is my favorite of the 10. And I think it was beautiful, but I kind of am leaning towards Anatomy of a Fall as well, because it was so brilliant and took such interesting twists and turns. And Holdovers is also really good, so it's a great category, with the exception of those two.
You like three of the five, that's 60%. Charles.
Well, I'm with Claudia pretty much on this. Maestro tells you nothing about what it is to be a conductor, a composer, or Leonard Bernstein. May December is creepy, and if it were about a man who had had sex with a 13-year-old girl, it wouldn't have been made. Anatomy of a Fall is interesting, but I think it would make a more effective play. And you can imagine a set that's half chateau, half courtroom, and those speeches would probably play better on stage as long as they are. I think there are lots of problems in Past Lives, like her family evaporates when they move to the New World, and you just never hear from them again. Holdovers was okay, but I like Dead Poets Society, so I guess I'd go with Anatomy of a Fall.
All right. Tim.
Oh, this is my favorite category. It's the one that lives on its own, where a germ of a notion in a writer's mind becomes the thing that drives everything else that will be in the film. Of these, Anatomy of the Fall is probably the most extraordinary, along with Past Lives. The thing about American Fiction is, American Fiction is a film that is outside of a box, but it brings attention to the box. Sometimes you have to be outside of the box in order to point out the box, which is what American Fiction does, which is why I love that. Maestro, interestingly, is the one film here that's about real people, yet all the people seem fake. Nobody in that movie seems real, but there's one of the real people.
Wade.
Wow. I think this is an incredibly weak category. I don't like Anatomy of a Fall at all, because I watch. I'm sorry, I'm incurring Lael's wrath here.
Because I watch
British whodunits on TV. This is like, it's the same thing, and then that recording. It's the biggest cheat I've ever seen in a screenplay. Maestro, to quote Claudia, no. May December, ew. Past Lives is really sweet. I look forward to anything that Celine Song does in the future, but I think The Holdovers is terrific. That is just a great screenplay, top to bottom, not a false note anywhere.
And that's Best Original Screenplay. Your chance to vote now. Anatomy of a Fall. The Holdovers, Maestro, who was intimidated. Someone was intimidated, I know. May, December, and Past Lives. All right, well, we're going to come back and get to the acting categories. This is the 22nd Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview, coming your way from the Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles, a week before the Oscars are handed out in Hollywood. We'll be back in just 90 seconds.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Welcome back to our 22nd Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles. Our critics are Amy Nicholson, Wade Major, Leah Lowenstein, Peter Rayner, Manuel Betancourt, Andy Klein, Claudia Puig, Christy Lemire, Justin Chang, Charles Solomon, and Tim Cogshell. Best Supporting Actor, the nominees are Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling in Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. Justin, please start us.
I think everything is coming together beautifully for Robert Downey Jr. in this category and has kind of all season long. He's a third-time nominee. You can just see the way he talks, the pride he takes in Oppenheimer when he talks about it after years of just like lurching through one tedious Marvel movie after another. Finally, a role, it's like, you know, manna from heaven. And he's really, really wonderful in the film. I think more people expected that Ryan Gosling would put up more of a fight for Anatomy of a Doll, but but no. He's really good in that too. He's also, to piggyback on what Tim said, he is the co-lead in Barbie, in much the same way that Kikui Kwan was the co-lead in Everything Everywhere All at Once last year. So there is some category fraud going on here. But to put a left, I have a left field choice. I really like Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things.
Yeah.
And he is, I believe, a fourth time nominee, and just this kind of Victorian horn dog, Stan Kowalski, Snidely Whiplash character that he comes up with is just really, I mean, it is over the top, but it is perfectly scaled to the over the topness of Poor Things itself. So I think he's great, and he's not going to win, but he should.
Christy.
Yeah, we have Iron Man versus the Hulk in this category. That's kind of fun. I agree with Justin that Robert Downey Jr. is going to win. That is the narrative of this award season, and it makes sense, and it is his time, and he gets to show the understatement and the shading that has been there all along but we have not seen in the past 20 years. But I also love Ryan Gosling, and I don't understand why he has not won a single thing all season long, because it's so much more than just him being this lovable doofus. Like, there's so much understatement going on there, and pathos, and perfect comic timing, so I would pick Ryan Gosling, but
Manuel,
he's not going to win.
I'm going to keep the Kenergy going, because I love Gosling. I get that we want to give Iron Man a golden one, but I am here for Ken and this comedic performance, that it's truly about showing how inert and plastic toxic masculinity can be.
Peter.
They're all good. Sterling Brown is a lot of fun. Ryan Gosling is very funny in the movie, and also, alas, or weirdly charming and touching in that role, which is surprising. De Niro, I thought, would be totally miscast in that role, and he's not. He really is totally believable. Mark Ruffalo, I think, gives one of the most obstreperously funny performances I've ever seen in a film. He seems liberated himself by acting in that thing. Downey would be my choice because I think it's such an extraordinary performance. And it's funny, a lot of people, I've talked to this, you know, having seen this film, they said, Robert Downey's in it? I just saw it, right? They don't recognize him because it's such a sea change from what he's done before. But anyone who's seen him in, you know, Less Than Zero or Wonder Boys, Pickup Artist, Chaplin, he's a great actor. He's even good in the Marvel movies, against all odds.
Yeah. Amy.
I mean, I'm so annoyed that Robert Downey Jr. is even nominated in this category because I don't think that role was particularly interesting. And I don't think he added enough to it into his performance to even make that character compelling to me. Like, in a battle between Iron Man and the Hulk, I'm firmly on Team Hulk. I think Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things, he is goofy, wacky, wild. He's showing us new shades of what he can do, right? I think Robert Downey Jr. is just reminding us of what he used to be good at doing. Mark Ruffalo's blazing ahead. And on that note, I also just want to give a quick shout out to Sterling K. Brown. I'm so happy he's nominated. But the film that I wish he was nominated for also came out this year called Biosphere. That performance in Biosphere by Sterling K. Brown, I want everybody here to watch it because you'll just walk away being like, oh, that is our next major, major leading male star.
Andy.
I never thought there would be a category where I thought Robert De Niro was the worst performance. But yeah. I also, partly because I thought Killers of the Flower Moon is my least favorite of these five films. I thought it was an hour too long. The others are all wildly entertaining. I think what Gosling did was remarkable. What Ruffalo did was maybe more remarkable. But Robert Downey Jr. is so overdue, and he was great in this, even though his character's exposition was the worst structural thing in the film. But still, Robert Downey Jr. is, in fact, a great actor in an unbelievable range of roles, and he is so overdue.
I liked Mark Ruffalo in this category because I thought it was so different than what he's done before. I thought he was really funny with Sterling K. Brown very close on his heels. Let's hear from each of you. Sterling K. Brown. Robert De Niro. Robert Downey Jr. Ryan Gosling. Mark Ruffalo. Best Actress, the nominees are Annette Bening in Naiad, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, and Emma Stone, Poor Things. Justin.
If Gladstone wins, can we say the Academy is gilding the lily?
Wait a minute, what's the time on that, God. Justin? I think that took you 40 minutes to get to that.
I think this race is a very neck and neck between Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone. Gladstone versus Stone. And it's extremely close in a way that last year's race between Cate Blanchett and Michelle Yeoh was very close. They both won Golden Globes. Emma Stone won the BAFTA, won the Critics' Choice, but Lily Gladstone may have retaken the momentum by winning the SAG Award, and which is often highly predictive. So I think floating above all of this are considerations of, do we want to give Emma Stone a second Oscar at the age of when she's 35, because she previously won for La La Land, the chance to honor Lily Gladstone, the first Native American Indigenous performer to be nominated or potentially, let alone win, in a lead category, and also, not to keep returning to category fraud, the question people have over whether she actually is a lead or a supporting role, given her limited screen time in Killers of the Flower Moon. I will sidestep that whole debate and say, I think Sandra Hüller should win for Anatomy of a Fall. I mean, she is just magnificent. If you haven't, and she has been magnificent for a while. If you haven't seen Tony Erdmann, it's wonderful, and she is amazing in it.
Andy.
I mean, I'm all in for Emma Stone, although Lily Gladstone, even though it's not exactly a lead, she is what holds the film together in a certain way. Because if I had to listen to Leonardo being an idiot for one more second, I was going to die. And she's like the gravity that holds it there. And I thought it was a very good performance. And yes, she will win because of external factors, I think, and including the fact that Emma Stone already won once. But boy, Emma Stone's performance was what do you call that kind of performance? I mean, bravura does not begin to actually say it.
Christy.
By far the hardest one to pick of all of these. It is so, so close. For so long, I have thought it was going to be Emma Stone, because if the actors are looking at what this actor is doing, it's so specific and fine-tuned. It's big and broad and wild, but also like really small in very subtle technical ways. And I thought, oh, they're going to go for that. Like, it's the acting you can see. It's big. It's out there. But what Lily Gladstone is doing is so understated and so subtle, and it is indeed the heart and soul of this, and it's so cohesive thematically. And I do believe that in the larger sense, that is a there's warmer feeling for that win. So at this very second in time, I will say Lily Gladstone, but I might change in 5 minutes.
I love the gravitas that she portrays, because she doesn't have a ton of lines, but there's so much on her face and in her presence, and that's acting too. And to me, it's very impressive. Amy.
I'm absolutely pulling for Emma Stone, because when you look at the different calibrations she has to think of from scene to scene, physically, mentally, emotionally, the performance she gives in one scene has to be a totally different person 5 minutes later and a totally other different person 5 minutes later. She's evolving over the course of the film. I don't even know how she held all of those different versions of that character inside her head. But the thing I admire about that performance, the bravery and the fearlessness of it, I also did feel like I saw that in Annette Bening in Naya. That is a performance where Annette Bening just really pushes herself to the limits, holds absolutely nothing back, puts her face on camera, swollen, bruised, giant, bleeding, screaming at everybody, being angry and selfish. That is an amazing, amazing role for her, and I'm really glad we got to see it this year.
Manuel.
I'm going to go with Hooler in Anatomy of a Fall. I think it's such a textured hologram of a performance that if you turn slightly to the right, you can believe something. If you turn slightly to the left, and also her line delivery of "your generosity conceals something dirtier and meaner" will continue to ring in my ears for years and years on end.
Best Actress, Annette Bening. Lily Gladstone. Sandra Hüller. Carey Mulligan. Emma Stone. We continue on our Film Week Academy Awards preview with the Best Actor category. The nominees: Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction. We need to go rather rapidly here, Tim.
Not nominated here, Matt Damon in this wonderfully realistic performance in Air, which I would swap out for Bradley Cooper and that rubber nose and all that emoting in Maestro in a heartbeat. I don't know who would be the lead performance in All of Us Strangers, but either one of those guys should be on this list, if not both of them. Paul Giamatti is the fella that I'm going to be rooting for here, although it's perfectly clear that Cillian Murphy is going to win.
Lael.
Ooh, I thought Colman Domingo actually gave a terrific performance in Rustin, full of fire and fury. I don't think he'll win, but he was so, so good. I also love Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction. I thought he brought just the right tone of sarcasm and wit to that. I would love to see Paul Giamatti, though. He's been acting for so long, doing such good work for such a long time. We can remember him all the way back to the Howard Stern movie. He's been working so hard, and he's so good in this, so funny, and there's some pathos in there, too. I would love to see Paul Giamatti win for the Holdovers.
I'm with you, Tim, about Andrew Scott. He totally, to me, that was the best performance of the year. It was not nominated, sadly, but I would like it to be Paul Giamatti of these people nominated. I think he's an actor's actor. He's been doing this for 2 decades. He's won Emmys, he's won other awards, SAGs, but he has never won an Oscar, and I think his performance was great. And
Wade.
It's going to go to Cillian.
Wade.
Yeah, it's been Giamatti and Cillian Murphy all season. I would have said Giamatti was going to win until the SAG Awards. When Cillian Murphy won the SAG Awards, I think that seals it for him, especially because Oppenheimer's going to run the table. And you're not going to give Oppenheimer all the awards and not award the guy who plays Oppenheimer. I think that's how, I think, honestly, that's how voters are thinking. If it were up to me, as much as I love both of those performances, I would go with Jeffrey Wright, who I think is so subtle. It's easy to overlook how good that performance is because it is so seamless.
That was a great performance. My pick would be Colman Domingo for Rustin, because the layers in that performance, the pathos, the bluster, all that he brings to that role, to me, that was the best acting performance for male actor. Best. Oh, let me get our audience members voting. Bradley Cooper. Colman Domingo. Paul Giamatti, Killian Murphy, Jeffrey Wright. Best Directing category, Anatomy of a Fall, directed by Justine Triet, Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese, Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan, Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos, The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. Let me quickly go down the line. Each of you make your pick, your favorite, Manuel.
Jonathan Glazer. I think what he's doing, I talked about it before in screenplay, but I think what he's doing and the unflinching discipline he brings, fantastic.
Justin.
Jonathan Glazer, but I will be very happy to see Christopher Nolan win. I think he deserves it, and he's should have won one of these by now.
Tim.
Yorgos, absolutely fantastic, original in every possible way.
I love the mix here. Andy.
Yorgos, although Christopher Nolan I'd be happy with.
Christy.
Yorgos, but Nolan's going to win.
Lael.
Justine Triet, for sure.
Wade.
Alexander Payne, who should be here. In the absence of Alexander Payne, the only one here who I think did even a half-decent job directing his movie is Christopher Nolan. Sorry.
Amy.
I don't like the other movies.
I'm going Glazer for his absolute sense of control from performance all the way down to sound design.
All right, Claudia.
Justine Triet, but it's going to go to Nolan. We know that.
Peter.
If they gave it to most directing, Yorgos Lanthimos would win. My pick would be Jonathan Glazer. I think, you know, if that's my best film of the year, then it's certainly the best directed film of the year as well. It's absolutely extraordinary, unlike any other film, Holocaust or otherwise.
Charles.
Hayao Miyazaki. Although, for all I know, Killers of the Flower Moon may still be running, and I missed some part of it.
So we have about 5 minutes left to talk about the best picture category. The nominees, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. So first question, which film should have been on this list but not? I need a title from each of you real quickly. Charles, I'll start with you. What should be here?
The Boy and the Heron.
The Boy and
several
the
of these could be taken off.
Peter.
Menu Plaisir, which was not even long listed in the best documentary category. Absolutely outrageous. Our greatest documentary filmmaker, one of our greatest
Frederick
filmmakers
Weisman.
Ever. You know, totally, not even long listed. I'm sorry.
Claudia.
Zone of Interest.
Since I know Manuel is going to say All of Us Strangers, I'm going to say Showing Up, Kelly Reichardt,
okay. Amy.
I'm going to go May December. I can't believe so many people up here said, ooh, I couldn't take it, walked away. The ooh is the point. You dig into the ooh. That's what we're here for.
Dig into the ooh. That's quotable. All right, Wade.
The Color Purple.
Lael is speechless.
Okay. Sorry. I'll say...
can come back to you.
No.
I know this is difficult.
One of my favorite international films, The Teacher's Lounge, I thought actually was worthy of being Best Picture as well.
All right. I will steal Manuel's pick, and I'll say All of Us Strangers. Sorry, Manuel.
Andy?
I did not prepare for this, and so I'm going to throw out Mad Heidi, which was a film I loved that nobody saw, and it makes Poor Things look like on Golden Pond.
I remember when you were on the show and reviewed it, it sounded like the craziest thing. I guess Heidi's in the public domain. You can do that with Heidi. All right, Tim?
They cloned Tyrone because they did. I love that movie. It's a big, big hit. And The Burial. All of Us Strangers should absolutely be on this list for sure.
I think that's almost unanimous, All of Us Strangers. We all were so impressed with that movie. Justin?
I'll let Manuel have the final word, but All of Us Strangers, I'm just piling on.
All right, Manuel?
Yes, I'm so happy that I get to be the poster boy for this beautiful ghost love story that everyone should see.
Yeah, in an acting performance, just almost inexplicably overlooked by Andrew Scott. All right, so now it's your chance of the 10 films that were actually chosen by the Academy to make your pick for the best film of 2024. Manuel.
It's a tie for me between Anatomy of a Fall and Past Lives, two movies that are about how perilous it is to make a life with someone else.
Justin Chang.
The Zone of Interest. But again, I'll be very happy when Oppenheimer wins. Two really intelligent, different World War II movies about the horrors that we do not see.
Tim Cox Show.
Past Lives. It's just this beautiful film about people and events and things that happen that we all understand. And I appreciate that very deeply.
Andy Klein.
Poor Things, but it's not going to win. Oppenheimer is. But I would be happy with Past Lives or The Holdovers, but they don't have a chance.
But Poor Things is your pick, did you say?
My pick is Poor Things.
Poor Things. All right, Christy Lemire.
Poor Things for me as well. It is grandiose and grotesque and darkly hilarious and singular, but Oppenheimer is going to win.
Lael Lowenstein.
Anatomy of a Fall is the one that keeps me thinking, wondering, and guessing and ruminating about marriage and relationships and decisions we make and the ones we could have avoided. I think it's just a terrific film.
Wade Major.
I only like four of these films. My favorite is The Holdovers, but if I were an Academy voter, I would still vote for Oppenheimer because it's better for the movie industry long term.
Amy Nicholson.
Barbie. I think this year, that was the movie everybody was talking about. I think 10 years from now, when we look at 2023, that will still be the film that we're talking about. Barbie, I had more people come up to me this year saying, I am thrilled I went to the movies to go see Barbie. I felt more excitement for the cinema because of Barbie. I need Barbie represented up here.
All right, Claudia Puig.
Okay, I'm going to echo that because I love Barbie, but Past Lives is so beautiful and so layered and so emotional and it's all about destiny. So the two together.
Barb and Liver. All right, Peter.
Zone of Interest, for reasons already stated, would be my top choice. Past Lives, I love. I think it's a wonderful movie. It's also, I rarely see films a second time, you know, certainly within 6 months or so. I did see this somewhat after I saw it the first time, and it was even better the second time, which is rare. Incredibly touching.
Charles.
Well, I think several of these are playing at the Emperor's New Cineplex. And I think they should wait and give this award after 10 years when you see what actually does remain in the vocabulary and what actually does continue to influence films. I think it will go to Oppenheimer. I think Boy and the Heron was criminally overlooked, just as, you know, Up lost to The Hurt Locker. And when was the last time anyone looked at their tape of The Hurt Locker?
All right, let's hear from members of our audience. American Fiction. Anatomy of a Fall. Barbie. The Holdovers. Killers of the Flower Moon. Maestro. Oppenheimer. Past Lives. Poor Things. The Zone of Interest. Well, this shows the range among moviegoers, the range among our critics as well. Thank you for joining us for the 22nd Annual Film Week Academy Awards preview from the Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles. Much more to come on LAist 89.3. Have a great weekend.
Hey, it's Brian, the host of the How to LA podcast. How about we go to the movies? Join us for a 10-part series, Revival House, and discover the magic of LA's indie theaters. Who knows? You might meet someone.
I know it sounds antithetical because you're just sitting passively, but in fact, you're connecting with everyone else around you.
Subscribe to How to LA from LA Studios wherever you listen to podcasts.